near where Captain Grimm stood by the pilot's stand.
"Good morning, Miss Lancaster,"
Grimm said.
"What can I do for you?"
"That woman, the captain of the enemy ship,"
Gwen said.
"Did you let her go free?"
"Yes," Grimm said. A muscle twitched in his jawline.
"Why on earth would you do that?"
she asked. "I saw no point in her dying." He paused for a moment, adjusted his peaked cap carefully, and then said, "I saw no point in giving her an opportunity to distract us during a combat action." Gwen felt her eyes widen.
"Oh dear, is that what we're doing?"
"Odds seem excellent," Grimm said. "Put your goggles on, Miss Lancaster."
Gwen blinked at him, then remembered and cursed herself for looking like an idiot who had never travelled by airship before. Leaving one's eyes unshielded at this altitude was an invitation to any number of etheric mental disorders, as well as to eventual blindness. She settled her tinted goggles into position.
"I'm afraid I don't understand. Why not keep her?"
"If I had, her ship, seeing help on the way, would certainly have unlimbered her guns and engaged us. We could likely have destroyed her, but in doing so would have cost us precious time and delay, and we would have been unlikely to do it with our shroud intact." The captain glanced toward the rear of the ship and said, "We need every bit of power we have to keep us moving and to fuel the shroud if we are to have a chance of survival." Releasing Captain Ransom was an implicit truce, and the least evil option available to me.
"I see," Gwen said. "Am I interfering with the ship's operation by being here?"
Again he began a quick reply, and again restrained himself for a few seconds before answering. "Not at present," he said. "Currently we are underway. It remains to be seen whether we can escape Itasca."
"Ah," Gwen said. "I thought you should know, Captain, that Master Ferris's gear has been returned to him. He and Miss Folly are in the infirmary now."
Grimm arched a brow and turned fully to her for the first time since she'd arrived on the bridge. "Will he be able to help my men?"
"He said he would try," Gwen said.
She gave her head a little shake.
"The poor old man looked awful."
"He's had a difficult time of it the past few hours," Grimm answered.
He flipped down the telescopic mounted on his goggles and peered past Gwen for several seconds before he grimaced and said,
"They're breaking out their chase guns."
Kettle turned his head and squinted back at the shape of an airship far astern.
"Itasca," Gwen assumed. "From there," the pilot said, his tone annoyed, "they must have the new model bow guns." "So much for that advantage," Grimm said.
"Are we going to give battle then, Captain?" Gwen asked.
"Not for very long," Kettle said darkly from his control station.
"Itasca is a battle cruiser, Miss Lancaster," Grimm said, by way of explanation.
"She's a great deal larger and more heavily armed and armored than Predator. We cannot realistically survive a pitched battle with her."
"Then we are running from her?" Gwen asked.
"We're trying," Kettle said.
"I know nothing of aerial combat, Captain," Gwen said. "But would it not be wise to descend into the mist and avoid action that way?"
"Under most circumstances, Miss Gwen, that is exactly what I would do," Grimm answered.
Gwen looked over the side of the ship. "And yet we seem to be ascending." Grimm nodded.
"Itasca was fully underway by the time we spotted her, while we were standing still. It was necessary for us to open as much distance as possible, as quickly as possible, and we're lighter than Itasca. All that armor plate weighs her down. It takes Predator relatively less energy to ascend. So to keep pace with us, she has to reduce power from her other systems to maintain an ascension as she moves forward."
"By running up as well as away, Predator was quicker off the mark?" Gwen asked.
Grimm nodded in approval. "Just so. Doing so kept Itasca from catching up to us and overwhelming us immediately."
"And once you're sure we are out of her cannon range, you'll dive back down?" Gwen asked.
"Normally, yes," Grimm said with a grimace. "But Journeyman hasn't finished putting the ship back together. She's not running at her best,
and she's not able to handle a combat dive yet. We could descend slowly, but if we do so, Itasca will be able to use her weight and momentum to make up distance on us and bring us within range of her guns.
Then what are we going to do?
Gwen asked.
Run like hell and pray, Kettle said.
Grim stiffened suddenly and said,
She's firing her chasers. Evasive starboard.
Gwen turned to look behind them. There was a bright flash of scarlet and white light from the pursuing ship, and a brilliant little pinpoint, like a tiny star, appeared and grew swiftly, unsettlingly larger. Even as she saw that, the ship heaved beneath them as Kettle took her into a swift bank, then settled her down again almost immediately onto her original course. Gwen's stomach flopped and wobbled, and despite her secured safety lines, she was all but thrown from her feet. She could not take her eyes from the incoming fire as she did. It flashed across the distance between the two ships in no more than a breath, growing and growing as it came. The sphere of energy detonated perhaps 50 yards ahead of the ship and far off to their port side, erupting into a cloud of pure fire, roiling flame dozens of yards across. The explosion was loud enough to make the planking of the deck vibrate. Gwen felt herself flinch from both the sound and the intensity of the light.
God in heaven, she breathed. What happens if that hits us?
We're at the edge of her range, Grim replied. When the energy of the blast is that dispersed, our shroud is best able to absorb it. Predator can take numerous direct hits from this distance. But our web isn't so lucky, Kettle said.
I don't understand, Gwen said.
Incoming fire, Grim said again. Evasive port.
Once more Gwen's stomach lurched as Kettle wove in the opposite direction for a few breathless seconds, then trimmed Predator neatly. Again, a thundercloud of fire burst to one side of the ship, but this time there were flickers of light at the very edge of the translucent cobwebs of her starboard ether silk web.
As you can see, Grim said,
our ether silk web extends beyond the protection offered by Predator's energy shroud. The web is vulnerable to incoming fire.
Could you not shorten it to bring it within the shroud's protection? Gwen asked. Would that not protect the web?
And reduce our velocity proportionately as a result, Grim replied. We'd slow to a crawl. Incoming! Evasive ascension!
Gwen was all but flung down to the deck as Predator abruptly climbed. She felt certain that her stomach was doing its best to share her skull with her brains before Kettle leveled out again. She found herself gripping the railing desperately to maintain her footing. This time the blast exploded a shade farther ahead of the ship, if a good deal below, which meant that Itasca was closer to Predator than she had been for the previous shot. Which meant...
Then that's why Itasca is shooting at us, Gwen said. She's trying to burn away enough of our web to slow us down so she can kill us.
We call it raking the web, Miss Gwen, Grim said politely, and that is exactly what she means to do. We can keep the distance open by continuing to ascend, force her to run uphill after us for a time.
Why? Gwen asked. What happens then?
We run out of up, Kettle said with a grim chortle. Go up too far and the air is too thin to breathe.
Gwen felt a little short of breath already.
Then what hope have we?
Itasca is overpowered, even for her size, Grim said. She's running 3 core crystals at maximum to keep this pace with us, and she'll be running her steam turbine all out too. That means her systems are more complex, more prone to overheating, component failure, and other technical problems.
She can sprint as fast as we can, Kettle clarified. But we can keep up this pace for days at a time. It's what we're made to do.
Grim nodded.
The longer we can keep this race going, the more likely something is to give on Itasca.
Incoming! Evasive starboard!
Kettle wove the ship to one side, and this time Itasca's bow gun claimed a small portion of Predator's web on the port side.
Can't you duck any further to one side? Gwen asked.
The more we weave side to side while a Tasker runs in a straight line, the more distance she makes up on us. Grimm said, Mr. Kettle knows his business.
Unfortunately, Kettle said sourly,
we don't get lucky. We're going to knock off work before lunch, Skip.
I'll accept luck if we can find any, Grimm acknowledged.
But be of good hope, Mr. Kettle. Itasca's web is vulnerable, too, and she can't dodge, and she should just about be within range. He turned to a speaking tube and called out, Stern gunnery deck! Bridge!
Creedy's voice came back out of the speaking tube, tinny and distant.
Stern guns, aye!
Rake her web, XO, Grimm said. Fire at will.
Fire at will, aye,
Creedy said.
A second later there was a howl of discharging cannon, and a blue-white sphere of fire of their own went hurtling back toward the Auroran ship. The explosion looked tiny in the distance, and there was an odd, long delay before its cough of distant thunder caught up with Predator. Gwen noted a faint shimmer in the air, and realized that she was looking at a large section of ether silk web being burned away.
Excellent shooting, Creedy!
Grimm called into the speaking tube, even as Kettle threw the ship into another sharp ascension to avoid fire.
Pour it on!
Aye, sir!
Came Creedy's voice.
Thank you, sir!
Why? Gwen said. If we keep shooting like that, we'll lose her in no time.
Except she hangs a lot more web than we do, miss, Kettle said. She keeps a lot more web in her reels than Predator can, and she's got 3 times the chase armament we do.
Gwen felt somewhat indignant at these facts. Well, that hardly seems fair.
Captain Grimm chuckled beneath his breath.
Itasca's made for exactly this kind of work, he said.
Then how will you defeat her?
Gwen asked. Grimm held on as Kettle wove through another evasive maneuver. The two aeronauts took it in stride, evidently staying upright through an act of sheer unconscious will. Gwen felt as though her stomach had decided to depart her body for warmer climes, and she desperately struggled to keep from retching in front of the captain and Mr. Kettle.
Without the ability to dive,
I can't,
Grimm said. I'll keep raking her web, but eventually, probably within the next half hour, she's going to take down enough of ours to overhaul us and pound us to bits.
I see,
Gwen said.
She swallowed. I don't suppose her captain will give up.
Why would he?
Grimm asked. His teeth showed in a sudden, feral smile.
He knows it as well as I do, after all. Barring an act of fortune on our behalf, the outcome of this chase is inevitable.
Oh,
Gwen said.
You have a plan of some sort, then?
Of sorts, Grimm said.
He put a hand on the rail as the ship rocked wildly to the side again, and more web was chewed away by the heat of a blast. A distant boom marked the detonation of a shot from Predator's lone stern cannon. Gwen frowned and considered his words for a moment.
Captain Grimm, she said, you knew escape was nearly hopeless from the beginning.
Yes.
Then if your goal was simply to escape, and remaining within sight of Itasca was certain death, it follows that risking a dive was our most sensible option. Granted, this ship may not have been able to take the strain, but it seems even the dire risk of that offers better odds for survival than this chase.
Grimm nodded again.
Precisely true.
Gwen frowned at him.
A gambit, then?
We've been marking our path with signal rockets since we left Spire Albion. Currently, we are following our original course back toward the Spire. If our signals have been spotted, and if any ships of the fleet have elected to follow us, we may have support, and if so, we may be able to take Itasca.
There are a great many ifs in that statement, Captain,
Gwen noted.
Yes.
You are risking everyone's life in an effort to take a single enemy ship.
Grimm arched an eyebrow, and his manner became intent.
Not just a ship. A storied enemy ship, Miss Lancaster.
Whether or not official statements have been made, we are now at war with Spire Aurora. A war that they are winning, handily, given the damage they've inflicted to the landing shipyards.
And you believe the loss of a single ship will counter that sort of blow?
Objectively, no, Grimm said. But wars are not simply about objective measures. They are about will, Miss Lancaster. About belief. The disruption the Aurorans will cause to our economy will not be remotely equal to the loss of any single ship. But if we can counter by taking down a ship like Itasca, we might reduce entirely the damage done to the fighting spirit of all of Albion. It is vital that we not be made to seem wholly helpless in the opening moments of the war. Once a nation ceases to believe that they can win a war, that war is lost. Gwen frowned.
And you're willing to risk the lives of your crew on such a prospect?
And yours, miss, he said quietly.
On the chance that a friendly ship might have seen your signal rockets.
It is less a gambit than a throw of the dice, Grimm said. He had turned back to watch ahead of the ship, rocking easily as Kettle took her through another evasive maneuver. But they are my dice.
What if Itasca breaks off? Surely she knows you are running toward Albion, toward our fleet.
Grimm tilted his head, as if he had never considered the question before. Then I suppose we return home with minor damage easily repaired. But she won't.
Why not?
Her captain was sent out to bring Predator down last month, to make a statement. He missed us. A captain put in command of a ship like Itasca will be professional, brilliant, ambitious, and hungry, miss. He won't want to go home without feathering his cap with Predator's wreckage. There was a sharp whistle from below, and a moment later the bridge speaking tube rattled with a tinny voice.
Bridge! Ventral lookout!
Captain Grimm turned to the speaking tube.
Bridge here. Proceed.
Contact, Skipper!
Came an aeronaut's excited voice.
5 miles dead ahead of us, down at the cloud line. Skip, I think it's glorious. She's descended into the mist and is ready to pop up.
Ha! Grimm said, smiling fiercely. Good eyes, Mr. McCauley. Mr. Kettle, when?
Kettle squinted ahead of them and then glanced back at Itasca, taking Predator through another lateral slalom as he considered the question.
Start a gradual descent now, Skipper, Kettle said. They'll build up speed and momentum on us. They'll close the range, but it'll keep their eyes on us and make it that much harder for them to pull out when they spot Glorious.
Grimm nodded sharply and folded his gloved hands behind his back.
Concur. Proceed.
Kettle nodded, and after his next evasive maneuver, put the ship on a downward angle that made Gwen's stomach rather unsettled, as the whole of the sky seemed to open up from the unfettered vista offered from the ship's bridge.
Glorious,
Gwen said, fighting back flutters in her stomach.
That's Commodore Rook's ship, is it not?
Yes,
Grimm said in a severely polite, rigidly neutral tone.
I believe it is.
Can't believe we're polishing the apple he's about to pick,
Kettle muttered.
Now, Mr. Kettle, Grimm said. There's a very great deal of angry Itasca behind us. I am well contented to have help from any ship in the fleet under the circumstances.
Kettle muttered something darkly beneath his breath, and Gwen frowned at the pilot.
Captain, is there a matter for concern here?
That Grimm paused for a thoughtful moment before he answered spoke volumes in direct contrast to his words, Gwen thought.
Not particularly, he said. Glorious is a battle cruiser as well, equal to the task of engaging Itasca, and Commodore Rook has a solid, competent fleet crew.
I note, sir, Gwen said, that you do not say that Commodore Rook is solid and competent.
That is not my place to judge, Grimm replied steadily. He has advanced quite capably through the ranks.
Kettle snorted heavily, soaring through another arc to avoid the rapidly expanding shape of an enemy blast sphere.
He's a
pompous, lecherous ass, Gwen noted calmly. Devoid of the wit God in heaven gives to a simpleton. But he has a certain rat-like cunning, I suppose. He looks pretty enough in a uniform, too.
Grim turned his head sharply toward her, and then away again. She could tell by the tightening in his cheek, seen in rear profile, that he was smiling. "I would not presume to contradict your opinion, Miss Lancaster," he said.
"That's because the skipper don't fight battles, he can't win, Miss Gwen," Kettle noted.
The regular thunder of enemy munitions detonating grew fractionally louder.
"Skipper," Kettle said, a warning tone in his voice. "If a Tasker gets any closer, there won't be time to evade. I'll have to start weaving. We might not make it to Glorious."
Grim turned to the speaking tube.
"Engineering. Bridge."
Journeyman's voice clattered out of the speaking tube.
"Aye, Skipper!"
"If there's anything else left in her, Mr. Journeyman, we need it right now."
"I'm stunned she hasn't buckled on us already, Skip,"
the engineer called back.
"Some of these runs are being held together with bloody twine. But I'll see what can be done. Engine room out."
The next few moments were, Gwen thought, uniquely terrifying. There was no kind of violent action happening near her, not an enemy to be seen as anything more than a boy's model airship soaring in the distance behind them. There was nothing she could prepare herself to fight. Instead, there was simply regular roaring thunder and boiling fire rending the air nearby, sending gusts of hot, ozone-scented air across the deck of Predator, promising a sudden and violent death. The ship rocked in increasingly severe, evasive maneuvers, each necessary to preserve her life, yet each also allowing the enemy to inch nearer. She thought she might go mad with the unnerving contrasts of the brilliant sunlight, the crisp, chill breeze in the air, and the thundering voice of aerial battle. It made her feel utterly helpless. Because, she realized, she was. There was absolutely nothing she could do to save herself from sharing whatever fate Predator met, apart from throwing herself over the rail at once. She had no training, no instinct, no knowledge that would help her survive in this circumstance. Her fate was, she realized, entirely in the hands of another person. Captain Grimm stood steady in his place on the bridge, hands folded behind his back, his safety lines tight and neat, the very image of what an airship captain was supposed to be, holding all their lives in his hands, and doing it without bowing beneath the burden or complaining of the weight. It was a form of courage that Gwen had never considered before. There was no way in heaven or on earth that this man was a coward who deserved to be cast from the fleet, whatever the records may have said. Gwen's breath suddenly caught in her throat. In the past several moments, Predator had sailed down near to the misty mesosphere with the Tasker gaining on her the entire while. There, ahead of them in the mist, she had spotted the shadowy form of Glorious, ready to burst forth into the teeth of the enemy.
"Let's not stand in Commodore Rook's way. Prepare for evasive ascension, Mr. Kettle,"
Grimm noted, his voice entirely calm.
"Steady. Steady."
An endless second passed, and Predator's luck ran out. A burning sphere from Itasca's bow gun exploded exactly amidst her portside web, sending the entire thing up in flames in a single violently blazing sheet of burning ether silk. The reaction of the ship was immediate. She slowed, throwing Gwen forward against the pull of the safety lines that strained to hold her in place, the heavy leather belt around her midsection pinching hard against her flesh, cutting into her. The ship slewed heavily to starboard, pulled off balance by the preponderance of functioning web on that side, her timbers groaning and creaking at the sudden shift of forces. Gwen actually saw one of the runs to one of the portside trim crystals fail in a shower of sparks, finally collapsing under the strain of hard use without the stabilization of solidly established systems to support it. The port side of the ship abruptly dropped a good 2 feet, bang, jarring Gwen and driving her brutally to one knee on the deck. Pain flared up her leg.
Grimm was thrown to his knees on the deck as well, but he never lost concentration on the moment, his voice rising to a bellow.
"Evasive ascension now, Mr. Kettle. Reef the starboard web. Kettle, wheel her around to bring our starboard array into position to support Glorious."
Kettle, held steady by the braces of the pilot's position, clenched his teeth and wrenched Predator into a sudden, lopsided climb, even as the ship lost more velocity, allowing for a Tasker to rush in for a killing stroke. Just as Glorious came surging up from the mesosphere, her broadside to a Tasker, firing her 30 cannon in rapid successive howling salvos of 10 guns each. The noise was too loud, the light simply too bright to be believed. Gwen found herself lifting her hands toward her eyes and ears and face as thunder and lightning pounded against them. Predator whirled with drunken grace around her vertical axis until her own, more slender but still deadly broadside came to bear on the enemy ship and opened up in howling thunder. Itasca vanished behind a wall of flame and deafening sound and roiling smoke. It seemed incredible to Gwen that any ship could do anything but be obliterated by such an outpouring of power. But Itasca did. The ship came sailing gracefully through the thunder and fire, her web blazing like an enormous halo all around her, her energy shroud glowing more brightly than 1,000 lumen crystals. Some of the blasts had gotten through, and her prow had been smashed and warped out of shape as if some titan had taken an enormous sledgehammer to her, and two of the three cannon in her bow gunnery deck had been reduced to smouldering ruin. But the vessel was in one piece, and already slewing her stern around with more grace than any ship so large should possess, even as she ascended. Glorious's salvo fire smashed against Itasca's shroud, but as the ship rotated, she brought fresh, undamaged portions of her protective sphere to bear against the fire, shrugging off the blows like a veteran brawler. Within a few breaths, she had brought her own port broadside to bear, and it fired in a single titanic salvo amidships on Glorious. Glorious's shroud, overloaded at the relatively smaller point of impact, gave her less protection than Itasca's had. Armor rang and rent and screamed as cannon tore Glorious's flank, wiping away half a dozen of her guns and smashing one of her three portside mastworks. Secondary explosions, probably from one of the cannon, blew a hole in her guts from inside the armor, sending splinters of shattered deck and planking spinning and howling throughout the nearby compartments. But Itasca wasn't finished. Rather than slowing, she kept rushing ahead, and her sharp angle of ascension carried her just over the top of Glorious's glowing shroud. Itasca managed the role of a much lighter ship as she went, and brought her starboard broadside to bear, aiming down at Glorious's deck from point-blank range. She fired in titanic fury, and there was only so much that shroud and armor alike could do at such a range, from that relatively vulnerable angle. Sections of Glorious fully 30 feet across simply vanished, charred to clouds of soot. Her main dorsal mast was cut in half and plummeted toward the deck. Human screams could not be heard amidst that destruction, but Gwen's imagination placed them for her near the small figures she could see consumed in violence that rendered even the doughtiest mortal form into a glass figurine. Glorious listed to one side, groaning and shrieking in her pain. But even so, incredibly, the ship withstood the horrible destruction visited upon her by the enemy, wounded but not destroyed, her heavy armor enabling her to survive the punishment laid out upon her. Itasca, meanwhile, rocked back to level, her steam turbines chugging and roaring, giving her some maneuverability, even as her aeronauts labored to deploy more lengths of her ether silk web from her masts to harness the greater power and grace they offered. If she was not untouched, she had been marked only lightly in comparison to the ship that had appeared to have every advantage on her in the outset of the engagement, and she was ready to fight on.
"God in heaven!"
Kettle swore, without a trace of mockery in his tone.
"Now that is how you handle a ship!" Keep us moving, Mr. Kettle,
Captain Grimm snapped.
Circle us toward Glorious and stay in her shadow.
He raised his voice to bellow,
Guns, keep raking Itasca's web. We've got to keep her lamed so that she can't get more fire into the holes she's put in Glorious's armor.
Rake her web, aye,
Commander Creedy's voice echoed. Predator's cannon shrieked, and sections of Itasca's web went up in flames, even as the large ship's reels spooled more out. Itasca's momentum slowed, the ship hovering sluggishly for a moment in which Glorious's massive firepower could make a proper reply to Itasca's greeting of a moment before.
Ha! Grimm said, clenching his fist. We can have her yet.
Guts and rot!
Snarled Kettle, sudden and furious.
Captain! Look at Glorious!
Grimm's head whipped around to stare at the fleet battlecruiser. Over the distance, Gwen's stunned hearing could just barely make out a loud, frantic ringing sound. It took her only a second or two to recognize it as the same bell cadence Predator herself had used to signal emergency maneuvers. And seconds later she watched as Glorious plunged back down into the mists, moving in a rapid, panicked-looking descent. Gwen stared after the wounded Leviathan, stunned. Only the swirling mists remained, spinning in a slow, circular vortex where Glorious had vanished.
The coward!
Kettle howled.
Damn you, Rook! You rotten crotch coward! Did you think you could take a fighter like Itasca without getting a few lumps along the way?
Gwen shook her head dazedly, her eyes moving to Captain Grimm. The man was staring after the vanished Glorious, just as she had been, and she could see the truth in the sickened horror in his eyes. Glorious had left Predator behind to die. Dimly, Gwen could hear Itasca's aeronauts howling in wild defiance and exultation, as well they might, having just turned an ambush back upon their attackers to send them diving out of the blue sky for the cover of the mists. And then Itasca began turning, to bring her broadside to bear on lamed, fragile Predator.
Chapter 68 AMS Predator.
Grimm watched as Itasca banked toward them, steam engines chugging, turbines roaring, and lined up the shot that would scatter Predator and her crew to the winds. Like everything else Itasca had done, the maneuver was performed flawlessly. Grimm could just see, at this distance, the outlines of the officers standing on Itasca's bridge, including the high-crowned hat of her captain. The man's dark red uniform was marred by a blob of white, a sling for his arm, perhaps. Some of the blasts from Glorious's opening salvo must have gotten through Itasca's shroud, and heat or shrapnel from the impact upon the ship's armor must have wounded the man. Yet he stood where a captain ought, doing what a captain should. Grimm could respect that. At least if he was to be gunned down, it would not be by some simpering, cowardly nepotist like Rook, or by the guns of some ragged, sloppy, desperately violent pirate. There was some comfort in the thought. Though it was a given, of course, that he and Predator would not simply lie down and die, either. He could not outrun Itasca, not now. Half of Predator's web had been shot away, severely limiting her speed, whereas the larger ship could simply deploy more ether silk from her expansive reels. Grimm could order the men to raise sail, but the winds were not favorable in their current position, and turbine-driven Itasca would end the matter before the canvas sails could be deployed. He could not escape in the traditional fashion. They were too far from the mist to try anything but an almost certainly suicidal dive, given that one trim crystal had already folded on them. For that matter, even a sharp ascent could be equally dangerous. To stand and shoot it out with Itasca would be an utterly futile gesture. Oh, a lucky shot might strike a weakened point in Itasca's shroud. She had been in a heavy exchange at close quarters with Glorious, after all. but a single fortunate shot from Predator's guns would be unlikely to inflict heavy damage against the battlecruiser's armor, with anything but luck guided by the hands of the merciful builders, the archangels, and God in heaven himself. In contrast, it would take a similar stroke of fortune for Predator to survive obliteration from Itasca's broadside. Grimm turned his head to regard the flag of Albion, snapping out straight in the cold wind from the main dorsal mast. He could strike his colours. The universal sign of surrender in aerial battle would almost certainly be honoured by a professional of the calibre of Itasca's captain. Of course, doing so would mean the loss of Predator, either taken as a prize, or destroyed and sent to the surface as an act of war, and Grimm's soul screamed out against that course of action. But what other option did he have?
"Captain Grimm?"
Miss Lancaster asked.
"What is that sound?"
Grimm frowned at her for a second and then tilted one ear to the air, listening. His hearing still rang with the fury of recent battle, but yes, there was a sound coming from high above. A sound like distant trumpets. And it was coming from directly out of the blinding mid-morning sun. Grimm whirled to stare at Itasca, thundering along under the rattle of her steam engines, the roar of her turbines, and realized that the enemy ship was effectively deafened by her own propulsion. Was there time? Yes, yes, there might be. Grimm felt a smile stretch his lips from his teeth and bellowed.
"Hard to port at flank speed, Mr. Kettle. Stay ahead of her turn. Guns, ripple fire on Itasca's bridge."
"Sir?"
Creedy called back. Grimm could hear the incredulity in the young officer's voice. Not only was he deliberately aiming for an enemy's bridge, an unworthy and generally unrewarding tactic, but ripple fire, loosing blasts from one cannon after another, would accomplish nothing against Itasca's heavy shroud at this distance. It would, in fact, do little more than provide a fireworks display.
"That is an order, Mr. Creedy," Grimm thundered. "Fire!"
Creedy's voice bawled out the order, and within seconds Predator's cannon began hurling defiance into Itasca's teeth. Blasts of fire exploded against the shroud near Itasca's bow, blotting her bridge from view in intermittent washes of flame.
"Captain!"
came Journeyman's near-furious scream from the speaking tube.
"Portside trim crystal arrays about to fold on us! We've got to get somewhere quiet and stable and cut power."
"Understood," Grimm called back. "Prepare to cut power to the port trim array."
"What?"
Journeyman blurted. Grimm turned to Miss Lancaster and began tightening her safety straps, checking each carefully.
"Excuse me, miss."
The young woman stared at him, her eyes widening.
"Captain?"
"Hold on to your straps tight with both hands, and do not adjust them, if you please," Grimm said.
Itasca continued her turn, bringing the annihilation of her broadside to bear, though Kettle kept wounded Predator racing ahead of it, banking into an arc that would circle around the other ship. The gesture was a futile one in the long term. Already Itasca was cutting her forward speed slightly, to send more power screaming through the lateral thrusters of her turbines, to spin her faster and catch Predator in the firing arc of her own portside guns. The foremost trio of guns in Itasca's array managed to traverse enough to catch Predator in their sights and spat angry spheres of flame. Her heavy cannon were considerably larger than those Predator boasted, and the enemy fire leapt across the sky to splash against Predator's shroud. It illuminated in a brilliant sphere of green light, and the roar of the cannon charges felt as if they shook Grimm's very bones. Grimm could all but feel his ship's determination to persevere, feel her stubborn endurance. But he could also feel some of the heat from the enemy rounds leak through the shroud, sending the heavy scent of ozone washing over the deck. Predator kept up her steady pounding of the area around Itasca's bridge, and Grimm knew that it would look like the tactic of a truly desperate man, hoping to end the threat to his ship by effectively cutting off the head of his foe. Stories and dramas often relied upon such a tactic. But in the messy practice of actual battle, targeting so precise was problematic, shrouds not so easily penetrated, and a determined enemy could usually batter through a foe's shroud amidships more accurately and rapidly than an enemy attempting to directly strike the enemy's bridge. But, Grimm thought, it was not his goal to wreak havoc on Itasca with his cannon. He had something far more dangerous in mind. After all, she was already deaf. Grimm wanted her blind, too. Itasca dropped even more of her speed to sharpen her turn, her armored flanks gleaming in the sun as she struggled to catch the smaller, nimbler ship in her gun's firing arcs, like a cat whirling on a darting mouse. Grimm could feel his heart beating in pure, frantic terror as he felt the angles of the ships changing, felt more of the enemy's guns beginning to catch up to Predator, and knew he and his ship had only seconds to live. Itasca was determined to finish what she had begun those weeks ago, and was focused wholly upon Predator's destruction. And because she was, she never knew a thing until the sound of strident trumpets suddenly rose over even the thunder of her own engines and Predator's cannon fire. Commodore Alexander Bayard's AFS Valiant came crashing down from the sun, the heavy cruiser dropping in a descent that was very nearly as sharp as the combat dive of a far lighter vessel, her war cry a clarion call. On her flanks were her division mates, AFS Thunderous, roaring like a storm, and AFS Victorious, her spars shaking with the steady rumble of a vast war drum. A roar of unadulterated ferocity went up from the crew of Predator as the three Albion heavy cruisers pivoted with the coordination of a troop of dancers, bringing their broadsides to bear on Itasca, and unleashed the fury of 45 cannon in a nearly simultaneous flash of light and sound. The range was brutally close. Bayard had brought his ships down between Grimm's ship and Itasca. Albion cannon blasts smashed into Itasca's already tested shroud, hammered through it, and gouged into her hull itself. Itasca's heavy armor plating had been designed to withstand guns exactly like those now being used against her, in odds exactly like those she now faced. But even Itasca could not ignore Bayard's opening remarks. His ship's cannon tore into Itasca's armor, tearing gaping holes in her outer hull and setting everything in the compartments behind them on fire. In an instant, nearly half of Itasca's portside hull simply vanished, blown into clouds of ash and flame and cinder and shattered, glowing hot armor. And yet Itasca's crew was too disciplined to be rendered impotent, despite the speed of Bayard's nearly perfect execution of a classic attack. Even as the cruiser division opened fire, Itasca howled her defiance back at her foes, her cannon screaming, and the weight of her entire broadside came crashing down upon Thunderous. The battlecruiser's heavy cannon made light work of Thunderous's shroud, and the greater density of Itasca's fire meant that Thunderous never had a chance. Though her outer hull was armored with copper-clad steel, at that range and against those guns, she might as well have been protected by so much glass. Cannon charges erupted against the heavy cruiser's armored exterior, tore a hole in her large enough to sail through in a yacht, and erupted out the far side of Thunderous's hull in a spray of shattered armor, fire, and incinerated wood, gutting her in a single salvo. Grimm saw Thunderous's starboard trim crystal array fail in a shower of small explosions, and her aft lift crystal faltered, so that she slumped abruptly to stern and starboard, her deck tilting at a precarious angle, and she began dropping swiftly. The strain on her timbers was too much, and with a cracking sound as loud as a cannon her back broke. The rear half of the airship simply plunged and became fouled in the long lengths of ether silk web, jerking the forward section of the doomed burning airship down, down, down. She vanished into the mists, but not before a quick-thinking aeronaut deployed an emergency buoy, basically nothing more than a tiny lift crystal attached to a coloured pennant.
"Shift fire to her webs," Grimm bellowed. "Let's give the Commodore the chance to wear her down."
"Fire on enemy web, aye," Tweedy responded, and Predator's cannon began raking Itasca's webs, preventing her from building any speed beyond that provided by her turbines. Itasca kept up her original turn, trying to shelter her ravaged flank from her enemies, but Valiant and Victorious split apart like a pair of wolves circling a lumber bulk. The two Albion ships had been unable to entirely halt their descent in such a short distance, and they slid under the Itasca's plane and to either side of her, each ship tilting on its axis to keep one broadside on the enemy. In response, Itasca rolled her undamaged starboard broadside down toward Victorious, exposing her belly to Valiant. Itasca's fresh broadside fired first, and this time all of her cannon were focused on Victorious. The gun crews of Spire Aurora's prized battlecruiser knew their trade well, but had a poor shooting angle, and their hits were more dispersed. Victorious's shroud flared brilliant emerald green, blunting much of the fire, but even so, what got through pounded her dorsal and starboard mastworks to splinters and tore ragged holes in her starboard gun deck, taking a horrible toll among her gunners and setting much of the starboard side of the ship ablaze. Victorious and Valiant fired again, but Victorious's broadside was at a feeble half of its strength. Between Itasca's shroud and her heavy armor, the battlecruiser shrugged off the hits, though she rang like some vast gong as Victorious's fury pounded her hull. Valiant, meanwhile, rolled almost to the horizontal as she slipped beneath Itasca, and then ripple-fired directly up into her belly. Itasca's shroud held for the first half-dozen impacts, but then Bayard's gunners began to gouge out great pieces of her armoured hull, wrecking her forward ventral mastworks and pushing more and more deeply up into the ship, like a fine slender knife being pressed into a man's belly beneath the ribs, questing for the heart. Itasca shuddered and simply took the pounding, keeping her starboard guns on Victorious until her cannon cycled and howled again. The second salvo was of no great accounting in terms of its accuracy, with Bayard pounding its gun crews with regular shocks of impact from below, but against wounded Victorious it was enough. Though the cruiser tried to turn her mangled flanks from Itasca's guns, the only thing she could do was rotate her wounded side down, exposing her only lightly armored deck to enemy fire. Her shroud failed in a catastrophic burst of sparks, and the heavy cannon of the Auroran vessel pounded her deck, tearing open huge sections and setting dozens of fires in the unarmored compartments of her interior. Victorious faltered and dropped like a man hit with a sledgehammer. A power surge must have hit her starboard trim crystal array, because she abruptly rolled, flipped, and began tumbling as she sank, whirling over and over her long axis, entangling herself hopelessly in her own web. Itasca shuddered and continued her turn, descending with too much grace for a vessel so large, steam engines chugging, turning her intact starboard broadside toward Valiant with a ponderous sense of finality, a behemoth ready to crush the last of its smaller opponents. The proper thing for Bayard to do would have been to increase his pace and stay ahead of Itasca's spin, just as Grimm had done only moments before. But instead, Bayard broke in the other direction, as if seeking to disengage. It was a seemingly foolish movement, one that might have been expected from a panicked merchant skipper or a green captain in his first action. It would only carry Valiant into Itasca's sights that much more quickly, and could not possibly open up enough range to make a significant difference in the accuracy of Itasca's gunners. Worse, The move exposed more of the ship's stern, where armor plating was thinner and the ship's superstructure more vulnerable. Grimm could all but see Itasca's sudden eagerness to bring her cannon to bear and destroy the last of her serious opponents. And in doing so, to expose the gaping hole in her belly armor to Predator.
"Kettle!"
Grimm shouted.
"Aye!"
the pilot called. He had seen the opening as well, and nimble Predator banked and dipped lower, sliding into the shadow of Itasca's hull, into the dead area where her guns could not reach, and where, if she rolled, Predator would be annihilated in a single glorious flash of luminous thunder.
"Creedy!"
Grimm called.
"Prepare salvo fire!"
"Salvo fire, aye!"
Creedy screamed.
"Mr. Journeyman,"
Grimm called into the speaking tube,
"cut the port trim array."
Grimm felt it when the power to the portside trim crystals went out. Predator's deck suddenly flipped entirely to the vertical, the motion a shock against his safety harness, a blow to his ribcage. Miss Lancaster let out a sharp cry of surprise, her voice tight with a terror that she quickly choked off. And Predator's starboard guns rolled up to Itasca's belly from a range of 50 yards.
"Fire!"
Grimm roared. Predator's starboard cannon howled as one. There was no shroud left to defeat the lighter charges Predator's guns could throw, and Valiant's heavier weapons had taken a disastrous toll on Itasca's armored hull and interior armor alike. In the open space of the sky, Predator's rounds may not have done much more than put red-hot dents in Itasca's outer hull, but within the contained spaces of her interior compartments, the salvo of the lighter guns exploded with savage fury, a jet of fire washing back out of the relatively small opening in her armor. Itasca staggered violently, and the salvo sent after Bayard's ship went sailing wildly in every direction. The roar of the Auroran's thrusters abruptly stopped, and for a few seconds the only sounds in the sky were the creak of timbers and the crackle of fire and the distant chugging of Valiant's engines. And then, with a sound like furious thunder, Itasca's boiler exploded. The shock wave of it smashed into Predator like some vast fleshy hand and knocked the air from Grimm's lungs. He tried to give an order to Kettle, but no sound came from his lips. Kettle was already descending, though, and continuing forward, sailing out from under Itasca. The enormous armored ship had been entirely deformed by the explosion, armored hull warped and dented outward by the force of the blast, torn open in dozens of places. Her mastworks were wreckage, around the clock, and multiple trim crystals had failed, so that she was listing to one side and adrift, rotating slowly. Helpless aeronauts dangled from safety lines. Her entire portside gun deck had been consumed in fire, and aeronauts were screaming as they struggled to escape the blaze, many dying as the safety harnesses meant to protect them now trapped them within the flames. Valiant's steam whistle wailed in triumph as she came about, taking a course that would bring her back to Itasca without crossing the firing arc of her remaining gun deck, and one of Bayard's chase cannons sent a single shot flashing across Itasca's bow.
"Hold fire!"
Grimm called.
"Hold fire, aye!"
Creedy echoed from the guns. For a long moment, Itasca hung in the sky like a great stunned beast, too dazed to understand its surroundings. Grimm could hear orders being shouted frantically up and down the larger ship. And then her colors came fluttering off of their few remaining masts and went spinning away into the breeze. Predator drifted far enough forward on Itasca that Grimm could see her captain on his listing bridge, braced against the tilt of his ship, held in place by three neat, taut safety lines. He looked of an age with Grimm, a tall, lean man with weathered skin and a blaze of silver in his otherwise coal-black hair. The man stared back at Grimm, then nodded, unhooked his sheathed sword from his side, and held its handle out toward Predator. Grimm straightened as much as he could in the nearly vertical position from which he depended from his own safety lines. He doffed his cap and nodded in reply to the Auroran captain.
Itasca had surrendered.
The battle was over.
Chapter 69 AMS Predator. Bridget woke up almost instantly when Benedict stirred in his sickbed. She sat up in her chair and wiped her hand at her mouth, as she always did. She had a wretched tendency to drool when she slept heavily. But she forgot, and came near to knocking out her teeth when the cast over her forearm and wrist smacked into her lips. Bridget hissed out a curse and raised her unwounded arm to her mouth to rub at the sting. That was all she needed, for Benedict to wake up to see her lips split open and swollen. The young warrior-born stirred and let out a soft groan. His body twitched, and then his arms moved, only to be held down by the straps of the infirmary cot he occupied. He opened his eyes and looked around blearily. The infirmary was crowded, with men strapped into cots covering nearly every spare foot of floor space. Dr. Bagan, after laboring for nearly a day straight in the wake of the battle, was in a hammock strung up in one corner of the infirmary, snoring with the force of an approaching thunderstorm. A second hammock had been hung up in the other corner, and Master Ferris lay in it, arms folded over his belly, sleeping with a small contented smile on his face. Folly lay curled up in the open space beneath her mentor's hammock, between the Etherealist's two wagons, sleeping with her mouth open.
"Don't try to sit up yet," Bridget said to Benedict. "Here, here, let me unbuckle it."
She leaned down and unfastened the straps that held Benedict flat to his cot, and he took a deeper breath after she had, and raised his hands to mop at his face. Then he lowered them, his eyes snapped into focus, and for a moment there was something wild and dangerous in them. When they locked on her, she felt that she hardly recognized him. Fortunately, Bagan had prepared her in advance for the kind of response a wounded warrior-born might have after a battle followed by most of 2 days of unconsciousness. Benedict's accelerated metabolism had burned fiercely for all that time, and he seemed more lean and dangerous than at any other time she had known him. Without a word, she passed him a large tankard that had been sitting, ready, and he all but snatched it out of her hands, clutching it clumsily due to the burns and thick bandages over his own. But he guzzled the water down with such urgent thirst that some of it spilled out around the corners of his mouth. By the time he lowered the mug, she had uncovered the large bowl of thick stew and the small loaf of bread that had been waiting with the water. He sat up, took it from her with a growl and a flash of teeth, and began eating the stew directly from the bowl, as if he couldn't get it into his mouth quickly enough. He supplemented gulps of stew with enormous bites off of the loaf of bread, hardly chewing them before he swallowed. Bridget followed Dr. Bacon's instructions and sat very still while Benedict ate, without speaking, moving, or offering to take the bowl from him when he seemed to be done. It was only after he had finished the bowl and the loaf alike that the wildness seemed to die out of his eyes. He blinked them several times, and then abruptly focused on Bridget again. The lower half of his face was stained with his meal. He lifted his hand to his mouth in a short, abortive gesture, and something like shame touched his eyes.
"Ah," he said, his voice low and rough. "I beg your pardon, Miss Tarquin. I was not myself."
"It's all right," she assured him. "How do you feel?"
"Awful."
Something deep and dark flickered in his eyes for a moment, but then it was gone.
"Where are we?"
he asked.
"Aboard Predator, in the infirmary."
He peered around him.
"Ah, how did we get here?" "We were at the temple, the last thing I knew."
"You collapsed from the silkweaver venom," Bridget said quietly. We knew Master Ferris could help you, and the others who had been poisoned. So the captain brought everyone aboard and set out to recover Master Ferris's equipment.
Successfully, obviously, Benedict noted. What happened?
He blinked and suddenly sat up straight.
Bridget, what happened to your face? Your arm?
He lifted a hand and touched her bruised cheek. His fingertips were light and